all for coming. I got off to a late start. The last group finished late, so I apologize for getting this up here. Let's see. What I want to talk about today is finding the funny. And you have to, once you come up with your joke idea, there are ways of tweaking it to make it funny. And that one of the things you have to do is to create a setup. And a setup is based on reality. So a setup is real, a punch is not real. A setup is sane, a punch is insane. A setup is normal, a punch is abnormal, you know, opposite. So yesterday we were having problems coming up with jokes, coming up with premises. And so, let's see, a joke is, your response to what's happening, to what has happened to you, or has happened here. So what I did, let me explain to people who don't know, I can't spell. So don't let it throw you, it doesn't bother me. You know, I hope it doesn't bother you. I know there are some teachers here, so, you know, this is what can happen to you if you can't spell. So these are what I would call setups. These are all real things, and these are all real things. And so comedy comes from connecting these real things about somebody. Every joke has to have a target, a victim. And the target here is Obama. And so he's the target. And these are things that's happening in our world. This is what Jay Leno does every night. This is what Letterman does every night. Is, you know, I'm sure there are writers somewhere have a list of things that's going on with Obama and things that's just going on out in the world. And they make those connections and create a joke. So they would say, let's see how I could do this. I'm trying to let's see. Give you an idea. So I would say something like, it was in the news today that President Obama got Osama bin Laden. And then, what up in this list could you do that would make, that could make a joke out of that? Let's see. Well, okay, Obama likes to play basketball. So you would say something like, the Republicans want to stop Obama from doing anything. Yesterday they took his basketball. So see how that works? The setup would be either one of these, and then the punch would be just the opposite. So you would pick something and then pick something else. Does that make sense to people? Mm-hmm. So if you see something, yell it out.
Well, one that came out was with the Obama, with the finding Osama thing, was that connects to the other side is the birthers wanted to see a long form death certificate.
That's perfect. That's perfect for what we're talking about. Let's see. Anything else strike people as something that would stick out?
Well, what about winning the Nobel Peace Prize and then the fact that we're in three wars?
Okay.
And should I say the joke that I heard? Did somebody say it here? The thing about, well, he's won the Nobel Peace Prize. How many wars would we be in if he hadn't?
Okay. Or we're in three wars. The Republicans want Obama to give back his Nobel Peace Prize. You know, that would be a joke. And you could take these. Now, you know, I lean liberal. But if you don't, you can still take these and use them to lean conservatively. This is not a liberal or conservative list. You can make your own list and tell your own jokes about Obama. And when you write a joke, this is what you do. You find the target. You could put anybody up here. You could put, of course you could put, we've done Holden. You could put Holden Village up here. You could put your spouse up here. You could put, so you could put anybody up here and they become the target. And then depending on where you want to go with your list, you write things about that target that you know, and you write, and then on this side, you would write things going on in the world, or things going on in your community, or things going on at your school, to poke fun of that person. Say it's the person is the principal at your school, and you wanted to poke fun of them, you know. So you write everything about the principal that you know, and then you write everything that goes on that's happened in that class, in the school. And then you just sit and, you know, create jokes from that list. So that's how you write gags, you know, which is what Letterman does every night, which is what Leno does every night. Their writers sit down with lists like these and what's going on for the day or the week, and basically punch it out. Does that make sense to people? Mm-hmm. All right. So one of the things we want to talk about today is, let's see.
Margaret Cho.
Margaret Cho. We will talk about Margaret Cho today. I really enjoy Margaret. In fact, that's specifically what we're going to talk about today. What's known as the act out. And you come up with a joke, and then your next step will be to act out. So let me write down the formula of a joke. And this is how jokes are created. And I'll try, for those of you who haven't been here all week, I'll try to make, you know, catch up on it. So attitude, topic. So, the anatomy of a joke is attitude. Who remembers what attitudes are? Was anyone here for that, or should I just go through it? An attitude is the four words that you would come up with that help you get to it is would be weird, hard, stupid, scary, or pisses you off. So this is how you get these are the words that you use to get at your humor, because your topic or your target, this is the same thing. The topic or the target is bugs you. It makes you angry. It irritates you. It gets on your nerves, and that's what your target is. So your attitude is what's weird. So you would say, what's weird about cell phones? Does anyone have a pet peeve about cell phones? Or is there someone who doesn't have a pet peeve about cell phones? Sitting on the bus, listening to people have private conversations that should be private, but they're not.
Answering at the dinner table.
In the movie theater, you know. It goes on and on. So one of the things that wouldn't be weird, that would piss you off. So, and it's okay to have those feelings about it, because it generates heat, which helps you then in turn make a better joke, make a stronger joke. So so your attitude would be these words, your topic would be the target, and the premise would be using one of these words. What's hard about cell phones? What pisses me off about cell phones? You'd use one of these, and that would get, you know, and you could come up with a whole list. You wouldn't have to stop and just, you know, what pisses me off about cell phones is people talking on them at the movie theaters. You wouldn't just stop there. You could make a whole list. If there's heat behind it, you could go on and on. You could make that list go on and on. And so that would be, you know, so when Jay Leno says something, hey, what about those cell phones? Well, that's basically what he's saying. You know what's hard or weird or stupid about cell phones. You have to make it conversational. You can't just open every joke with you know, hey, you know what's weird about cell phones? You know, you'd have to make it come up with different ways of saying that. You can say, you know, cell phones, man, cell phones are people in their cell phones. It's really hard. It really pisses me off. You could start that maybe once, but so you have to mix it up. But still, you get the point. You know, you come up with a setup in terms of cell phones. And then the joke, the punch part is when you come out and say, what bugs you about cell phones? So the question is, what bugs you about cell phones? And then you have to say why. You know, that helps you get to the funny. If you ask that question, why does it bother you when people talk on cell phones during the movie? Why? Somebody, why?
You can hear a movie.
It's distracting. You came to watch a movie, not to hear them talk on the cell phone. This is the absolute truth. I was at a movie. I shouldn't have been there. It was a horror movie, and it was in a black community. I was there watching this movie, and it was one of those Scream movies. And the guy flips open his cell phone, and it rings, and he answers it, and he opens his cell phone, and he says, "Man, this movie ain't nothing. Look at this woman. She's gonna come up here." Then the guy, "Look, that's so phony. You knew she was gonna." He's narrating the movie. He's not only narrating it, he's critiquing the movie while I'm, you know. So that would make a great joke, you know. And I would act it out, just like I just did. Acting out gives your joke. Like I said, there's a two-dimensional comics, the old school guys, Bob Hope, Jack Benny, who stood flat-footed and told you a joke. Those were people who learned comedy, who did comedy on the radio, and you never saw them. So they didn't have to do anything. But today's comedy, you have to do something. You have to make it a three-dimensional ordeal. You have to make it a movie. because people are today are used to a screen and they want to see some movement. And that's what you would, that's what you do. You do an act out. And then a mix is what they call, you could stretch the joke out. So after I told everybody he was on the phone talking to his girlfriend, oh man, this movie's nothing. You know, and so a mix would be how I could stretch that joke out even more. I could say, like, you know, what if he was talking to, you know, what if he was talking to his accountant, you know, and he'd say something like, oh, this movie's nothing, but it may gross so much money, you know, something like that. Yeah, that's not funny. Let me see. And you got to be honest. If something's not funny, just stop it and go to something else that is funny. Unlike preaching, but we'll go into that. So a mix is you ask the question, what if, you know, what if the person on the phone was your mother? Or what if the person on the phone was a foreigner and they were talking another language? You know, what if, and you'd act that out. You know, you'd act that whole thing out. Or something that would stretch the joke out even more. And so that's sort of anatomy of how a joke works. Does that make sense to people? So when you see, like, Margaret Cho, you mentioned Margaret Cho. I love Margaret Cho. And she does this routine about, she did comedy on a lesbian cruise ship. And she was saying, she says, those lesbians are jealous of, you know, they're so jealous. And they come up to each other and say, I saw you talking to her and her and her and her. You know, very funny. You know, she acts out what, you know, whatever she says, she acts out. She brings a picture with it. And to a lot of comics, people like Margaret Cho, Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, you almost can't read their jokes because it's not enough. You know, you have to see them. And there's plenty of comics you don't have to see, but those are the main comics that I can think of where you just have to see them, you know, because the jokes don't work, really, if you don't see them making the faces, making the voices, acting out, and that sort of thing. An act out is basically you never say, and he did this, and he picked up the phone and he was talking. You would say, if you said it, then you would do it. You know, you wouldn't leave it at that. You say, he picked up the phone and he was talking, you know, and you become the person talking on the phone. And that's what creates an act out. And then the mix is always what if this, what if that. There's a Robin Williams joke where he says, you know what's hard about having kids? And then he said, and then he answers the question. So that's what a premise is. You ask a question, you know what's hard about having kids, and then you answer the question, well, why? What's hard about having kids, Robin? And he says, you can't leave your drugs around when you have kids. And then he goes into this routine of hiding his drugs, you know, that kind of thing about having kids. So, any questions? Nothing? Nobody? Okay. Just yell out if you got a question. And I usually, like I said, I usually write my stuff. So my question for you all is, what do you see in comedy that, or what do you think would be the difference between comedy and preaching?
If you're trying to be funny or not.
Say that again?
If you're trying to be funny, sometimes preachers are funny without meaning to be, when they self-contradict or mispronounce something.
Okay, so mistakes that a preacher would make would be funny. Yes. To the congregation, maybe.
To the congregation. Yeah. Not to, not 10 people laugh at or with you.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of them try to use a little bit of comedy to get people's attention, and then they give it up.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing to have comedy in your preaching. Especially you start off with comedy, but you also tell stories. If you tell, I won't tell you. I want you to tell me what else could pastors do to be more interesting?
I think, you know, Christians are funny people, you know, and leading the Christian life, you know, that you could do that as a Christian's a target. You know, we try to do a good job, but we screw up, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities for funny stories there that helps people laugh at themselves and feel human, and also it's okay, you know, it's part of the teaching thing.
You could, as a pastor, do a list where you just write Christians and then make a list of all those things that Christians are, you know. What are Christians in terms of people in the pews, not the big picture Christian, but people in the pews. What are some things that Christians are like? Come on, people.
They're quiet, they're silent.
They sit in the back.
Okay.
This is just one of the types of Christians.
What?
If you go to it, depends upon the church. There are some very noisy, raucous churches.
Well, there are, but they're not Lutheran.
No.
I mean, we're talking, we want to limit this to churches we know. You know, we don't want to make fun of churches we don't go to. There is a rule in comedy is that you laugh up, you don't laugh down. So you make fun of the powerful. You don't make fun of, you know, it's like standing up doing a whole routine on disabled people. Well, how funny is that? No. But if you do a whole routine on Dick Cheney, well, then, you know, that's a whole different thing. So let's keep it real in the people we know.
Judgmental.
What else?
Judgmental.
They have potlucks with 14 different varieties of Jello and Miracle Whip casserole.
And let's be honest. Garrison Keillor has pumped this well dry. I mean, this is what he does. And I'm sure somewhere he has a list of what Lutherans are like. And he comes up, he minds that list on a regular basis. But what else?
Serious?
Southerners. They sing a lot.
You say harmony in a Catholic church, they know you don't belong there.
I bring a group of homeless people up every year, and the people who come with them are social workers that work with me, and they're unchurched and bitter, and they come up, and their biggest complaint at Holden is the singing. You say, the singing. Why all the singing, you know? And it's like they're afraid to sing. Like if they sing this word, you know, they're going to be trapped. You know, like someone's going to come out and grab them and say, we got you now, you know. And so they just sit there. They don't sing. Well, if you're not singing and everyone else is singing, I would imagine it looks pretty awkward. It feels pretty awkward, you know. Everyone's singing, I'm like, here's our cousin. You know, see what I just did? It's an act of it.
What about the hugging?
The hugging, yes. Yeah. The hugging. They don't get the hugging, you know. And it's like, you know, they sort of, I don't know, they see hugging as limited to relatives and people you want to sleep with. It's like nothing in between, you know. And, I admit at Holden there's probably a mixture of all of that. But still, you know. You hug people at Holden. You haven't seen in a while, old friends, or you know. But anyway, that's my thing about single.
Coffee.
Oh, coffee. Yeah. I'll put hugging. I heard a thing on a Garrison Keillor where he was talking about hugging, and he said during the passing of the peace at whatever church that is. In Lake Wobegon, he says they have a rule is that you're not supposed to cross the aisle. That the aisle is a natural boundary, and you're not supposed to cross that. You're not supposed to cross the aisle. And I you know, at Holden, well, you know. But anyway, okay, so we'll do that about, you know, so about Christians, and then. You could come up with comments or material out of this that could, you know, just like you have a notebook. Everybody who does creative work needs to have a notebook. And in that notebook, they just jot down whatever pops into their mind. I always have a notebook or a piece of paper in my back pocket where I jot down things that come to my mind, ideas, insights, whatever. And you'd be surprised at what a lifesaver that is and how much you can generate just writing down stuff like that and keeping it with you. So, all right. Anything else? Any other questions? Any other ideas about Lutherans and preaching? And making it interesting, and making it funny, and making it that we can learn from comics. Is there a comic that some of you have seen that you think, you know, that's something I could probably take some notes from? And I don't mean to turn your sermonizing into a shtick, you know, but I mean something that...
Eddie Izzard.
Eddie Izzard. He's a cross-dressing comic.
He's an action transvestite.
Okay.
But his stuff on the church is really brilliant. His conversations that the Trinity has.
Okay.
You know, what's that god awful racket going on? Oh, that's the Lutherans. You know, that's the white upper class privileged folks singing. You want to hear some good singing? Go to the folks who've been knocked down and oppressed for ages, and they know how to sing with joy. I mean, his way of portraying the church and history, and he always comes back to, okay. He always ties things together.
All right. I agree. I went too far.
I think there's a lot of comics who can teach us things about the church. Jim Gaffigan has a whole routine about going to church. And how exasperating it is for him because he just can't make sense of what's going on there because he's not used to it. He talks about how you're near the end and you think you're about to get out. He says, they're messing with you. They just make it longer for no reason. The guy's up there going, man. And, you know, I mean, it's funnier when he does it, but it's his whole routine about the things that don't make sense at all to him. And it's good for church people to hear, like, to really get the point of view of an unchurched person, why some things that we think are so meaningful mean nothing or are just crazy.
Yeah. And I think these days you should always preach with unchurched people in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Because the days where everybody grew up in church and come to church, you know, those days are gone. You know, there's oftentimes plenty of unchurched people sitting in our pews. So
they're the ones in the front row.
Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna say anything else? Yeah.
No, I think part of what's like part of funny oftentimes for me is dare, like a sort of daring. Mm-hmm. That there's a daring in like saying something that's really shocking or unexpected. And it seems to me that we can learn a lot from that, I think, in preaching. And I mean, the gospel is like shocking and unexpected, okay. You know? And so to be able to deliver something that is the way in which the proclamation of the gospel is really like surprising and like takes us kind of from the blind side in a way. I mean, that's part of what I think where funny is something that you couldn't have conceived of, and it's outlandish, but it strikes home too, and that's so it's funny. But I think the gospel is kind of outlandish as well, and if we can kind of recover that sense of kind of daring about saying like what the impact of the gospel is in the world.
Well, last night at Michael's session, you were talking about the radicalness
the way, the place.
Yeah, the place. But I forget. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought it up if I can. But you were just making a point of how unconventional this whole Jesus thing is. And I think we forget about that in our preaching sometimes. And we just preach along and preach along. And we forget to point out the fact that this particular thing is radical. And sometimes we use the word radical and we point out stuff that isn't really radical anymore. Everyone has that point. But there are some things that are really radical and that they should be pointed out. One of the things that I think Lutheran pastors are afraid of is their opinions. And some comics, you know, a lot of comedy is a lot of opinion. And I'm not saying you should use opinion in place of the gospel, because the gospel has its place in preaching, of course. But don't be afraid of your opinion, because your opinion may spark somebody else's opinion. And so the whole opinion thing is very important, and that's very important in terms of comedy. The old comics didn't used to use opinions. They would just rattle off jokes. You never know what Bob Hope thought about anything. You never knew what Jack Benny thought about anything, really. But then somebody like Lenny Bruce comes along, and he just kind of lets you into his head, you know. He just, puts those opinions out there. Who's the woman we were talking about the other day? The woman from Colorado with the tats. She's a preacher. Yeah. She's another one. You hear her talk, and what makes it so different is that she's not afraid to put her opinions out there. You know, she's not just... a lot of preaching is just taking scripture and kind of reiterating scripture. But there's no connecting it to what's going on in the real world. And she connects it to what's going on in the real world, and she opens her head up and kind of lets us in her head and in her heart by sharing her opinions on things. And like I said, a balance is very important. You don't want too much opinion and a bunch of opinion and just a little bit of gospel. It is a balancing act, but we shouldn't be afraid of our opinions, and I think a lot of preachers are. You don't really know what they think after the sermon is over.
Yeah,
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Joe Sittler, who I think was a great preacher and everything, one time at a pastor's conference where he was talking about preaching, opened up with the line, he said, you know, one reason most sermons are dull and boring is because most pastors are dull and boring.
Yeah. I don't want to touch that.
Neither did anyone else.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, much of seminary is getting rid of the interesting guys. But that's just my opinion.
So. Well, actually, my opinion would be the parish life beats it out of pastors a lot of times.
Yeah.
Pastors are afraid to be interesting because they've been interesting in the past and there have been consequences for it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The thing about stand-up is that the thing about stand-up is that you can say all these interesting things and then you're out of town. But pastors, you know, you got to say these things and get paid by the people you're saying them to. I don't know. That's almost impossible to do, really.
Make fun of the board of elders or something.
Yeah. Another thing that that comedy is supposed to do that pastors are afraid to do is provoke. Provoking is an honorable tradition. And who was I talking to this morning? Peta? Who was, is he here? Well, I'll talk about him. we were just talking. He was talking about James Cone. And James Cone wrote the Black Theology. He started Black Liberation Theology and wrote the book called Black Liberation Theology. And he said he heard James Cone talk, and James Cone was very provocative. And that's an honorable thing for a comedian to be, is provocative. And that's an honorable thing for a pastor to be, is provocative. To tweak the minds and the imaginations of the people that that you're talking to, you know, that's something that pastors need to do more of and to be able to do that. And
Stephen Colbert, maybe that's provocative.
Well, yeah, Stephen Colbert is provocative. I don't know if I could sit through a whole sermon of Stephen Colbert. But yeah. And John Stewart is too. I mean, all those guys are provocative. And I'm not saying pastors should go all the way to that extreme to make it shtick. But I do think that some of that is needed and necessary. Let me share with you the...
Huh? Did I say something?
Yeah.
Is not a pastor limited by who he is as a person and personality?
Yeah.
Not everyone is a Jay Leno who can craft jokes and this kind of thing. And that's certainly to me.
Well, everyone can be provocative. You can provoke people. You have opinions on things that people need to hear.
But to the extent that they sit there and laugh at you,
I didn't say you had to laugh. I just said you had to pique
people's
interest.
Jokes.
No, I'm not saying. Like I said, it's a balance. You know, I'm not saying you should load your because you only got what 7 to 10 minutes or 7 to 12 minutes as a pastor. You have to make a decision. Do I want to crack a joke or do I want to give insight into the gospel? You know, and you know, you may say, okay, I'll crack 2 jokes. Mm-hmm. You know, and the rest will be insights into the gospel.
But by that time, you maybe use 7 minutes. And you
well, 8 minutes. Well, one of the most important things of stand-up is editing. Because your punch should be the shortest sentence. And your setup should be no more than 3 sentences. So brevity in joke telling is very important. Set up punch, that's what they call it.
But this whole thing of who the pastor is in his personhood certainly puts a limit on how he puts things together.
That's true. Like, yeah, not everybody's funny. And I'm not saying that you, if you're not funny, if you seriously think you're not funny and you don't want to work on becoming funny, I would say no, don't try to be funny.
I ain't
you're trying
you.
To teach mm-hmm. us to be funny, right?
Huh?
I think it's a skill we could learn.
It's a learnable skill, you know. Rumor has it, I mean, I've heard it, that Bob Hope was not a funny guy. That Bob Hope was sort of a cold fish, you know, and that Bing Crosby was downright mean, you know. But you'd never know it, you know, because they learn the art of joke telling. They learn the art of you know, set up punch, how to deliver a line, and, you know, they had writers. So, you know, you have to remember that too. You know, these guys have writers. So,
is it true that a lot of comics are very shy in real life? I mean, I heard that somebody, I don't know, maybe I'm even not even remembering correctly, but it seemed like I heard Johnny Carson was a very shy person.
Yeah.
Social life.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent that is, because I didn't make it. Let me be clear. I didn't make it to the top of the comedy heap. You know, what I did was did comedy for about 8 or 9 years. I went to a club. I got there. This is the comedy life. You go to a club at about 7:30. You wait to get in line for an open mic. You go. You put your name on the list to do 3 minutes at an open mic. And the rest of the time, you're just sitting there. You're listening to comics lie. You're listening to comics try their routine on you. You're watching comics go out and either smoke a joint or sit there and drink. So that's where I was. You know, that's the comic life. And then you just work your way up from 3 minutes, and then you get 6 minutes, and you're standing there. I mean, so you go every week, a couple of times a week, 3 times a week, and you do your little 3 minutes, and you add new stuff, you putz with it, you take old stuff away. You know, you're constantly building up your set, you know. And other guys hear you, and if they like you, they'll say, why don't you come, I'm gonna do this show, why don't you come and, you know, you can do 6 minutes. Or, you know, I'm gonna do this show, why don't you come and you open for me. And you build up, you know, and it all has to do with the connections you make, the friends you make, and you may never get to the top of the heap. Most guys don't, most guys fall out and, you know, they have to make money, they get married, they have kids. You know, they can't hang out at a comedy club all night till 12 midnight, you know, making jokes. So that's the comedy life, you know, at the beginning. So that's how it goes. And, you know, your hope is to get a gig somewhere where some, it's all based on relationships. Who's heard of Zach Galifianakis? How do you say?
Galifianakis.
Who's heard of him? Mm-hmm. And so he's been in two of these hangover movies. The first one just made tons of money. There's a guy that I used to do comedy with. His name is Brody. And he he left Seattle, like so many do, and you have to go out on the coast if you either go to New York or you go to LA, and you basically start all over again. You stand in line, you know, to get a spot for that night, to get your 3 minutes. You start all over again. But anyway, somehow he met this Zach Galifianakis. I just can't say his name right.
Close enough.
But he met this guy, and they became buddies. And so he's been in both of these movies, these hangover movies. Now, it was a bit part, and if you didn't know it was him, if you weren't looking for him, you never would have been able to find him. But, you know, now he's there. He's making movies, and that's, you know, that's how it goes. So to become a great or a good comic is a long road. I know a couple of people who are in, three people who are in L.A. trying to make it, and they've been there since their 20s. They're middle aged now, and they're still doing little projects, which is what Hollywood is, just a bunch of projects you do until you get the big gig. But and they've met all kinds of famous people, but they're still, you know, hustling every day. You have to go and start all over again, and that's the comedy life. So,
well, Verlon, make me laugh. Tell us a joke.
I can't think of any jokes.
Did you say you were naturally funny? I mean, you were funny before you started?
I was funny. My whole family's funny. We're just, but still, even if I'm naturally funny, to stand up and do jokes, you have to put it in this format, because you're doing jokes for people who do not know you. You know, they don't get the references. You know, you didn't, every joke that you have to be there, if you relied strictly on the fact that you're a naturally funny guy. You know, that just doesn't cut it. You know, you have to do it this way. You have to construct a joke and consistently come up with material and, to make it work. Or even if you are a naturally funny guy and you throw out a joke, if it laughs, you keep it. You'd be crazy to throw that joke out. You know, if it works, you keep it. You know, you try something else. If it doesn't work, you throw it out. That's how you do it. That's how you build up a repertoire of material. And you do that as whatever in the creative world, you would do that, whatever. I mean, pastors, you know, you got stories that work. And you know they're going to work. You keep those stories. But if you got the story that doesn't work, why would you save it if it doesn't work? You know, I mean, you can tweak it, you can try it again, this way or that. But if it doesn't work, you know, you'd be crazy to try that story again.
You know? Well, there's all kinds of humor, but jokes are different. Stand-up comedy and telling a joke is just like you say. But, you know, there's other kinds of humor you can use in your everyday life, like wit or dry wit, or just being funny in other ways. But if you're doing stand-up comedy, that's the way you got to do it.
Yeah, but still, whatever you do where you're in front of people and you're talking,
right.
You keep the good stuff, you throw out the stuff that's not working, or you tweak it so it will work. You don't just keep pounding away at it thinking, well, they're dumb if they don't get it. Well, no, you're dumb if you keep it. You know, Your job is to make as a pastor, you want to make your sermon work. You want a sermon to relate to the people who are there. And if your story isn't working, it clearly isn't relating to the people that's there. And I agree with Garrison Keillor, who said that people don't really want to laugh uncontrollably in church. You know, they don't want to go, ah, they just want to smile. You know, they just want to go, oh yeah, I've been there, I've done. You know, he says, that's all they want. You know, so your job as a pastor is not to knock them out of their seat. You know, as a comedian, I want to knock them out of their seat, but I got help. They're sitting in the dark and they're drinking.
After communion, that's when you ask.
Yeah, yeah, and they want to be there. They paid money to be there for you to knock them out their seats. Well, nobody's paid to go to church. And they, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, they do not want to be knocked out of their seats. If it happens, fine. But that's not what you're going for. You know, you want them to relate to what you say, and you want to, you know, you want a smile. You want a recognition that, yes, I've been there, I've done that. You know, is that asking too much? Okay. What else? Any other questions or any other?
Utah says you prefer real stuff. What did you mean by that?
Real stuff?
I thought you said that, you know, some people make things up, you prefer the real stuff.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, some, you know, the real stuff is where the comedy is. You're not supposed to make stuff up. Comedy is stretching the truth. People can tell when you've made stuff up. I mean, the same way with preaching. People can tell when you've gotten something out of a book. You know, you've gone online and went to Illustrations or Us or something and got an illustration about dogs walking on the beach or something. People can tell that. But there's so much that goes on in our life that, you know, we can jot down and use that. You know, you don't have to make stuff up. It's there. It's happening every day. If you wrote down what your day was like from when you got out of bed to where you are now, there's something in there you can preach. You know, there's something that went on today that you can preach, you know, for those of you who preach. There's something there. And yeah, that's what I meant by real. So, any other questions? Well, I guess that's it. It's time. Thanks for coming. Tomorrow we're going to talk about stage personas, and that kind of thing.